I'm back.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
The cult of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cult of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy, I'm the cult of personality. The cult of personality, the cult of personality.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Big Apple Podcast. I'm your host, Cash, back once again after a long wait. I'm so sorry for the wait. I've been terribly ill for the past week. I haven't been feeling well. I haven't been able to talk so well, but I'm feeling much better. The meds have helped immensely, and it's time to get back to the show. How are you guys doing this Halloween special edition, where we recap on what's happening so far in the NFL season between the Giants and Jets, what my perception of the Nets and the Knicks are so far after four games this season, and recap on the MLB season of the Yankees and the Mets. So thank you for joining me. You can support the show by signing on to the Patreon or helping out in our listeners channel on this website as well. So, starting things off with basketball. Starting things off with the New York Knicks. This team has a promising upstart. They started the season slow, 1-4, but with RJ Barrett playing like he's playing and Julius Randle dishing like he's dishing and Mitchell Robinson blocking like he's blocking, this team should be all right. They will not make the playoffs this year. I don't see the Knicks making the playoffs this year. I see them finishing with the 9th seed, maybe the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference. They won't be in the bottom again. They'll win more than 17 games. I'd say at the least they will win 37 games with the 9th seed in the Eastern Conference. And if the East is as bad as I think it's going to be, then the Knicks could slither in as an 8th seed like the Orlando Magic did last year. And, they have a good upstart. They have a good team. I believe that David Fizdale finally has a roster in which he can work upon. And I think that this roster has the tools to be good. Moving on to Brooklyn now. I think that the Nets are having a slow start as well. But that is understandable when it comes to new French with new players and a fresh upbeat organization, especially an organization that now has the quote unquote expectations of a super team like the Lakers, like the Clippers, like the Rockets, because you have all-stars in Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, and when he returns, the almighty Kevin Durant. The Brooklyn Nets, they have the tools to win it all. They're not going to win it all this year because Kevin Durant is recovering from an ACL tear. And even this morning, he has said to himself that he will not be playing at all this season. He will be rehabbing. He will be getting better. And, you know, it's all a matter of just seeing how things go. But so far, I think that the Nets and the Knicks, they're having their slow starts early, which is good. They can pick up speed by the middle of November, heading into December. And the Nets will make the playoffs as a fourth seed at the end of the 2019-2020 season, whereas the Knicks will miss the playoffs by a few games. They'll be the ninth seed, and they'll probably have a lottery pick this year again, and you know, working their way through the draft and signing key players. They have a lot of cap space, so I expect the Knicks to make a lot of splashes this year. Then the Nets, stay the course, try to win as much as you can, and you know, be ready for Kevin Durant's return, because when he returns, you're gonna have a lot of rust, have a lot of players that is gonna want more playing time, or you're gonna have to break it to them to see what's going on. But you're gonna have a lot of questions coming to free agency after the season. And so far, this season is looking good for you guys. Keep up the good work. Now, moving on to football. I've honestly been dreading this for quite some time. Like, this is probably the most unfun I'm going to have this time around. In a football standpoint, the Jets and the Giants, what in the world is going on with the New York Jets and the New York Giants? First things first, the Jets are 1-6. We'll let that sink in real quick. The Jets are 1-6. The Giants, well, they're not faring any good either. The Giants right now are 2-6. But you can understand that because it's the Giants, you know. Like, their only star player at the time that we knew of was Saquon Barkley. Then Daniel Jones started over Eli Manning and just dominated. The only way it's going to take me a minute to get used to Daniel Jones being our starter, because I was so used to Eli Manning being our starter. I mean, Eli Manning was the one that beat Tom Brady twice in the Super Bowl. So seeing that there's a new starter for the New York Football Giants, and his last name isn't Manning, it's going to take some getting used to. But Daniel Jones has proven his prowess by winning 2 straight for us, and then proceed by losing 4 straight for us. But I don't blame Daniel Jones for us losing those games. You know, we had quite a few injuries to our key players and whatnot, but the thing that really gets to me is really our front office. What in the world are they doing? You know, You say you're not going to trade away. You're not signing Odell Beckham Jr. to trade him, and then you trade him. Okay. You let a lot of your key defensive players go in free agency. You, once again, and I'm still doing this to this day, you're letting Dwayne Haskins rot in Washington when he could have thrived in New York. Now, I get it. You know, you obviously saw something in Daniel Jones that nobody else did. And he dominated. He did his thing. He, he was really helping as much as he could. And, you know, he's not getting the help he needs for the Giants. So, you know, a lot of, like, key trades that should have been made weren't made. And, you know, it's just a mediocrity for these New York football Giants. Now, for the Jets, on the other hand, I don't know what's going on with those guys. You know, Sam Darnold had mono, so he missed a few weeks, which is understandable. But, I mean, you guys were supposed to be that team, you know. Signing Le'Veon, you know, you signed Le'Veon Bell, and, you know, that is all well and good. But, you know, like, it's still, you guys didn't get the job done. And you guys are 1-6. You're not making the playoffs. I'm sorry to tell you that. And this is a major disappointment. I don't know what's going to happen next season, but you guys need to make some huge moves next season. You guys need to make some big pieces, or else you will stay mediocre to the point where it's going to cost too much to keep these guys, and then you're stuck with terrible players. Players that want to get paid and won't play well because they're not getting paid enough. And you'll be nothing more than the Patriots' punching bag for many seasons to come. On to baseball now, and the season is over. Congratulations to the Washington Nationals on winning your first ever World Series championship. To much of dismay I have, because I am a Mets fan, really was hoping that the Astros beat the Nationals, but it was a very competitive World Series. Neither home team won their games at home. Every road team won a game. And so basically it was all whoever had home field advantage was losing the series. The Astros. I was about to say the Rockies. See, my mind's all over the place. The Astros were the proverbial favorites on winning the NBA championship. But, you know, the Nationals, they stuck to their guns. They relied on their pitching, which is reminiscent of the Diamondbacks of 2001 that relied on their pitching of Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling to defeat the overpowered New York Yankees to win their World Series championship. All in all, the Yankee season was a disappointment. This team was built to win the World Series championship, and they got trampled. And they came back only to lose via walk-off by Jose Altuve in Game 6 of the ALCS, for the Astros to win the pennant and head to the Fall Classic to lose to the Washington Nationals. It should have been the Yankees, and I stick to what I say. It should have been the Yankees in there. Adronis Chapman stuck with the same pitch that he used basically the entire at-bat he had against Altuve, and Altuve figured him out way too quickly. In all aspects of the word, will the Yankees be back? Well, they just declined Edwin Encarnacion's contract, which is understandable. He was eating up a lot of contract. You spent $2 billion over the course of 10 years to build a team that is not even won a pennant yet. This is not good. But if you maintain the core group that you have now, maybe trading Andujar, because when he comes back, having him and Torres swapping positions, it's not going to work. You need to trade one or the other. And trading Andujar is much safer than trading Torres. You need a premier pitcher. Gerrit Cole's on the market. Madison Bumgarner's on the market. You need one or the other. You don't need both because you can't afford both. You need one or the other and you will be good to go. All in all, if the Yankees do that, then they are the premier favorites of winning the World Series. If not, get ready for another disappointing season from your Bronx Bombers. Moving on to Flushing, Queens, and the New York Mets have changed a lot. New York Mets have really shown that they can handle the business. Pete Alonso is your Rookie of the Year. Jacob DeGrom, your Cy Young winner. The only issue is injuries. A lot of these players get injured. A lot of these players don't know how to get it out the way. And a lot of these guys are really suffering because of it. The Mets are suffering because of it. But with the firing of Mickey Callaway and, the veteran leadership of Robbie Cano and, just having that experience goes a long way. So I do see the Mets in need of a bullpen talent, in need of an infield talent, and they will go over the hump as being a premier playoff team. And maybe one more starting pitcher to go with the mix, a quality starting pitcher, and you got yourself a perennial baseball playoff team. And now to our main event of the evening, professional wrestling. So, a lot has been going on these past couple of months in pro wrestling. Raw and SmackDown has got Pyro back. Awesome for that. And SmackDown has moved to Fox, as well as NXT moving on from the WWE network to the USA network on TV. So now NXT is on TV. Obviously, it's competition to AEW Dynamite being on TV as well on Wednesday nights. Of course, in the world of professional wrestling, a lot goes on. I'm only sticking with one show, and that show is WWE. There are many other podcasts where you can listen about other wrestling promotions, but I am strictly doing WWE alone, because if I do all the wrestling shows, I'll be here for hours, and that's the last thing I want to do. So, onto professional wrestling, and by specifics WWE, they had their pay-per-view Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia today. And personally, this is the best Saudi Arabia show they've had ever. In a wrestling standpoint, there was a lot of good wrestling matches, a lot of technical wrestling matches, quite a few celebrity matches as well. Only a couple. I think it was only like two so far. And a main event, which was satisfying. It was another pay-per-view where the fans were satisfied. And, you know, all in all, if I had to give this show a grade, I would grade this show a B minus. It was a good show. A lot of high points, few low points. This show wasn't at all a smackdown slam bust show, but it did its part. And you know, the Saudi Arabian fans, they're always going to be excited because, you know, it's a wrestling event in Saudi Arabia. You know, it's pretty big, for them, obviously. And you know, it's over the top. It's outrageous. This is professional wrestling at its finest. You know, WWE prides itself on being over the top and outrageous, and just trying to change the narrative on things in WWE. So, you know, kudos to them for building a show as good as this. And yeah. So, with that being said, let's get to the show at hand. So we kick off Crown Jewel with the WWE Championship match. Brock Lesnar versus the newest signee. And ironically, he is also the man who beat Brock Lesnar in the UFC. It's the reason why Brock Lesnar has a scar under his, I believe, his left eye. Cain Velasquez. This match started off as just a simple MMA type feel. You know, Cain Velasquez had his had fighting gear on. You know, he had MMA gloves, and you know, he had the MMA boot. And of course, Brock Lesnar, obviously, when he returned to 2012, had the MMA look and everything. And this match was really, it was really slow. It was really slow paced. It wasn't much going on. Cain Velasquez apparently was a great wrestler. I didn't see much wrestling from him in this contest at all. And Brock Lesnar put him in a Kimura lock and made him tap. So, you know, Brock Lesnar is still your WWE champion. Rey Mysterio, at the end of the match, Rey Mysterio attacked him with the chair. Brock Lesnar swerved him away. But Rey Mysterio kept going back at him and just kept hitting him and hitting him and hitting him for revenge on what he did to his son Dominic. I see Rey Mysterio facing Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship. It could be on SmackDown. It could be on anytime on Raw, whatever the case may be. But I see Rey Mysterio facing Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship. And don't be surprised if Rey Mysterio wins, beats Brock Lesnar. Now we're moving on to the next match of the evening. Moving on to the next contest, or the tournament, actually, or they call it the Turmoil, Tag Team Turmoil, to announce the best tag team in the world. They had the whole trophy, which I thought looked great. The teams that were involved in this match were the Raw Tag Team Champions, the Viking Raiders, the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Revival, the New Day, the OC, the B Team, Lucha House Party, and Lucha House Party. There's two other teams that I'm thinking of that are crossing my mind. Rude and Ziggler, and there is a final team that I'm literally losing my head over. It's a brain fart. There's one last team. I'm really trying to think. What was that? Who was that last team? I honestly don't remember what the last team was. But the tag team turmoil was pretty good. There were some matches that took its time. There were some matches that had the length it needed to be good. The New Day showed out. The Revival showed out. Oh, Heavy Machinery. That's the 18. Heavy Machinery also did their thing. Gallows and Anderson won the tag team turmoil. They beat the Raw Tag Team Champions, the Viking Raiders, which was very surprising to see them lose so cleanly against the OC. It's really a lot to be told of about Gallows and Anderson. They have had an up and down year in WWE, but for them to win the tag team turmoil and be crowned the best tag team in the world, it's good. It's showing that that WWE are finally being all in on Gallows and Anderson. From really what they've seen in New Japan is the reason why they signed them, right? Exactly. So I honestly I'm happy for Gallows and Anderson. Hopefully this leads to, you know, them doing their thing. Hopefully it leads to something great. And you know, I think that the OC are being underutilized and not being used right and WWE. And you know, with AJ being the United States champion and him having great matches, especially the match that he had against Humberto Carrillo, and Gallows and Anderson winning this tag team turmoil, winning the best tag team in the world trophy, I believe that it is very good for them to win that trophy and to solidify themselves as a premier talent, as a premier tag team, future champions, Hall of Famers, you know. So I think that they will be better than what they were when they debuted into WWE 3 years ago. Crazy how it's been 3 years ago since they debuted in WWE. Look at where they are now, you know. Good thing comes to those who wait, I guess. Moving on to our next match of the night, it's Mansoor versus Cesaro. And this was a very surprisingly good match. I mean, Cesaro, obviously, you know what Cesaro is capable of. He is a highly talented superstar with many, many, many years of experience. And Mansoor, you know, being the first Saudi Arabian WWE superstar, he was here last year. He won the Battle Royal last year, and they did absolutely nothing with him. He made it to NXT once, lost to Adam Cole. We never saw from him again. He's back this time going up against Cesaro, in which he did eliminate in the last year's Battle Royal. And now he's facing Cesaro in one-on-one action. Cesaro made Mansoor look good, and you know, there were no losers in this match. Mansoor beat Cesaro. You know, he had a feel-good moment. You know, the fans, the Saudi Arabian fans, they loved him. You know, they kept cheering his name, kept clapping for him, and you know, he deserved that moment. He absolutely deserved that moment. And you know, this match was short and sweet, and it was just simply good all around. You know, the chemistry that Mansoor and Cesaro had, it was by far amazing chemistry. And you know, I believe that, you know, Mansoor can be something special, but it needs to be on the right show, a la 205 Live or NXT. You know, either one of those shows would do him justice. And you know, as long as he keeps developing into a good premier superstar that the WWE can get behind, then you know, I think that you know, Mansoor can be something very special in the hands of WWE. Moving on to the most intriguing match of the night, Tyson Fury versus Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman came out all serious. He came out ready for a battle. You know, he was telling Tyson Fury, "Oh, you're gonna get these hands. You're gonna get these hands. I'm gonna knock you out. Like, you know, you're gonna hand you your first loss." And Tyson Fury is a charismatic person. Tyson Fury is one of those guys that, you know, you can say what you want and he'll troll you till kingdom come. This match was, with all aspects of the word, you know, it was something special. You know, Tyson Fury sold a lot of moves that Braun Strowman did on him. And which was very surprising for a celebrity to take wrestling moves, let alone sell them the way Tyson Fury did. It was like he was made for wrestling. You know, this is just another form of entertainment for Tyson Fury. You know, even when he came out, it started off with, you know, with a lot of pyro and the song, you know, "It's Your Thing, Do What You Want to Do," you know, like just completely trolling Braun Strowman, trolling the fan base, you know, literally, like, just, you know, showing his entertainment side. There's a reason why they call him the Gypsy King. And when he came out wearing a turban and the garments of a higher up in the Saudi Arabian caste system, you know, you dress all night, you use higher ups, and you know Tyson Fury came out looking like that and annoyed Braun Strowman, and you know, they had their little spat, their little thing going on. They had the match, and Tyson Fury knocked Braun Strowman out. It was a TKO finish, something you rarely see in WWE these days, which is why I thought the TKO finish was a good finish to this match. Obviously, it showed that, you know, it protects Braun Strowman and also protects Tyson Fury, as, you know, still being this undefeated phenomenon. And he took a power slam. The only downside of the match was when he took his shirt off. You know, it was really, like, you know, yeah, Tyson, you're cool and all, but ooh, man, you forget Tyson Fury's a very eccentric person. He don't have much of a, you know what I mean, crazy body. As you see, he took one shirt off. He had a compression shirt to hide the love handles. So when he took that off, the love handles just flopped down, you know. And I know what it's like having love handles. I got them. You know, so like, for those who are very insecure about the love handles, they probably wouldn't have done that. But, you know, it's Tyson Fury. It's, you know, what, you know, WBC heavyweight champion of the world. You know, he's won all the titles. Is what can you do? Huh? You know what I mean? What can you do? And you know, obviously this isn't over, which is good. I mean, you know, he has this big heavyweight bout against Dante Wilder in December 2nd, and you know, I guess, and this is his free time during when that happens. this match was highly entertaining for me, and you know, it protects both guys, obviously, as I said, and hopefully this leads into something in the near future. On to the most underrated match of the night. It's AJ Styles versus Humberto Carrillo for the United States Championship. And this match was very entertaining for me. I guess the fans didn't see it as very entertaining because they didn't react so much about these two as the U.S. fan base would react about these two. Because we know these guys so much and how well they can, you know, tear the house down in a wrestling ring, especially AJ Styles, who, quite frankly, is one of, if not the best wrestler in the world today. You know, for anyone that don't have AJ Styles, too bad, so sad. You know, he's going to be in WWE till he retires. This is it. This is the final road for him. So WWE is doing their thing. And, you know, making sure that his final run in the business is something special. His match with Humberto Carrillo, it was slow at first. But what can you expect? AJ Styles is not 20 anymore. He's in his 40s. So, you know. Like, there's a lot of what you can expect from AJ Styles still, but there's still like area to improve for him. The OC coming out with the best tag team in the world trophy, it was pretty cool to watch, you know. It's showing me that WWE are going to be all in on DOC being the top stable in WWE. How long is this going to last? I don't know. But from what we know, DOC are going to be that dominant team on Raw, that dominant stable. And, you know, it's really all a matter of seeing where things go from here. And, yeah. You know, just let's be happy that, you know, that Styles and Humberto had a good match, and hopefully they'll have better ones to come. Okay, kicking things off to some history tonight. Natalya and Lacey Evans had a match in Saudi Arabia. This is the first women's wrestling match in Saudi Arabia. Or is it the first WWE women's match? I believe it's the first WWE women's match. And Natalya and Lacey Evans are very revealing. Their costumes or their attires, they're revealing. And in Saudi Arabia, you cannot reveal anything. So Natalya came in wearing her leather onesie, but she had a pink shirt on, a huge pink shirt on, with her heart logo on it. Lacey Evans came out, and she usually doesn't wear, you know, pants or, you know, long sleeves or anything, and she was wearing her logo in a, you know, an extra, extra large t-shirt. Looks like the type of t-shirt that, like, you would give a very tall, fat person. Like, this is how big these shirts are. And they had a simple technical wrestling match. You know, a lot of back and forth. Natalya won via the sharpshooter, but, you know, the match itself was important. It was the reaction that these ladies got from the fans. The fans really embraced Natalya and Lacey, and they didn't disappoint at all. They had a good match. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. It was a good. How I say? A good technical contest. In a technical wrestling standards, this match was great. As a technical wrestling match, this match was great. As a pure on the Spanish fly wrestling match, it was satisfying. It was pretty satisfying. But you know, big shout out to Natalya and Lacey for making history, and you know, much respect to both of them. And you know, huge moment for the young ladies and women of Saudi Arabia aspiring to be wrestlers. And you know, this right here is proof that, you know, you can make it if you put in the work hard enough. So, big historic moment for Lacey and Natalya Neidhart. Okay, so now getting to a more Survivor Series-like type of match, except it wasn't an elimination match. It was one to fall to a finish. Team Hogan versus Team Flair. Team Hogan, whose team captain was Roman Reigns, and he comprised the team of Rusev, Ricochet, Ali, and Chad Gable, aka Shorty Gable, aka Shorty G, versus Team Flair, which had Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre, King Corbin, Bobby Lashley, and Shinsuke Nakamura. This match did its part as a high octane, high action 10-man tag match. You know, Rusev and Bobby Lashley, they had their own situation going on, with Lashley, you know, kicking it with Rusev's wife, and you know, Rusev wanting revenge for that. You know, the oddball out of really all of this was Ali. Why was Ali? Ali had pretty much no beef. Same thing with Randy Orton. Randy Orton was just being Randy Orton. He'll RKO his own grandmother if that meant him winning. You know what I mean? But Ali, that was kind of the odd one out. Shinsuke is another one, because wasn't he feuding with The Miz? So I guess that dropped. I mean, okay. It's really this is really something you would probably see on a regular episode of Raw, but because of the the all-star feel, you know what I mean? Look at the field of talent you have. Lashley, former ECW champion, United States champion, Intercontinental champion. Rusev, former US champion. Shorty G, former NXT tag champ, former SmackDown tag champ. You know, Roman Reigns, former WWE Universal Champ, Drew McIntyre, former NXT. It's just, you know, I can go on and on about it. Team Hogan won, go figure. I mean, I feel like Ric Flair's team should have won because of how well Ric Flair was just chirping at the mouth since they even gave him, you know, the idea, like, yeah, you know, we're gonna have this match and you and Hogan will be captains. You know, Flair is a joy to watch. We're gonna miss those moments about him. You know, this was basically a match to hype up the main event of the evening, and it did its job. You know, a lot of cool moments, and I felt satisfied, and I think the fans felt satisfied, and they felt ready for the main event, which will be coming up next. And boy, am I excited for this. As you can see, that sound only meant one thing, and that is the main event of Seth Rollins versus The Fiend for Seth Rollins's Universal Championship. It's a false count anywhere, and the stipulation of this false count anywhere is that no matter what Seth Rollins or The Fiend do to each other, the match cannot be stopped. There must be a winner. Seth Rollins comes out to a mixed reaction, cheers and boos. The Fiend gets no mixed reaction. He's getting cheers all around. His lantern wasn't working. I'm guessing that was on purpose. Thank you, Saudi Arabian government. Anyways, the match has the same lighting effect as the Hell in a Cell light had. You know, everything was red, so really it wasn't the best to see anything, really. But the match was very brutal. Seth Rollins did basically the same thing he did at Hell in a Cell against The Fiend, except The Fiend wasn't staying down. Seth Rollins hit him with God knows how many curb stomps, which, by the way, that move has officially become overrated. It's like Roman Reigns with the Superman punch and spear combo. You've seen it too many times. You've seen so many people not kick out of it. It's getting to the point where you're just like, oh, next, please. But The Fiend kicked out, and not only did he kick out, he kicked out at one. There are times where he kicked out at two, but there are points where he kicked out at one and then gets back up. Seth Rollins hits with that curb stomp, and you're thinking, oh my God, it's Hell in a Cell all over again. But The Fiend gets back up. You know, Seth Rollins is hitting him with everything but the kitchen sink, then he gets back up. Then Seth Rollins hits him with the kitchen sink by throwing him over the set. A literal explosion happened around The Fiend. And the ref, he knows he can't stop this because it was laid down that he cannot stop this match. And Seth Rollins goes and he moves the casing off to get The Fiend. And then all of a sudden, Seth Rollins gets blinded and The Fiend rises up from the destruction. like a literal demon, and he grabs Seth Rollins by the mandible claw and he hits him with the Sister Abigail. 1, 2, 3, your new WWE Universal Champion is The Fiend, Bray Wyatt. And thank you, Jesus, they gave the Universal Championship to The Fiend. Now it's all a matter of keeping him relevant, because who's to say he'll be back on Raw? Who's to say he'll stay on SmackDown? Whatever. Who's to say he'll work both shows? If he works both shows, that won't be so good, because, you know, the fans will start getting bored of him seeing him on both shows, and I thought we stopped that. But I'm guessing with the trade that they made in the past with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, and then going to Raw are future considerations. Obviously, with Bray Wyatt being the Universal Champion, he would have to stick to being on, you know, Raw, as representing Raw as a Universal Champion. So, yeah, that was Crown Jewel. I hope you guys enjoyed this special episode. Once again, I am so sorry for the hiatus. We are back and better than ever, here to, you know, give me more insight. Check out my Twitter handle at Big Apple Podcast or Big Apple Pod, whichever one. Look it up, we're on there. And yeah, you guys have a fantastic day, and I will see you in the next one.